So, hi, everybody. Unfortunately, Umesh couldn't be here today for this podcast with his bandwidth problems down under. So I'm going to take over as host, and I'm delighted to have both Sandra Gritti from Leisman and Giovanna Jagger from IWBI. I always get it wrong when I try and spell out the initials, but I think it is the International Wellbeing Institute. Is that right?
International Wellbeing Institute.
Wellbeing Institute. Sorry, there you go. I always get it wrong when I try and spell it out. Behind the Well Standard. Look, great to have you both here today. I think, you know, you gave me some ideas about what you think was going to be important to discuss, which were really kind of linked to the accompanying roundtable that I ran a couple of weeks ago and some of the other podcasts of this pilot series, but I've been sort of co-hosting with Umesh. One of the things that has started to emerge in those podcasts is a kind of structure through the different themes, challenges, issues, whatever you want to call them, that people want to discuss, which is kind of like, where are we at? Where do you think we could or should be? And how do you think we could get there? So hopefully I'll be able to ask or prompt some sort of discussions around what you presented within that kind of structure of the sort of strategy triangle. But to start with, do you think you could both, to try and give some context, would give me some background about who you are, what you do, and why it matters to whom, with some idea of maybe your journey of how you've got here? Sure. I'll start with Giovanna, just because G becomes before S for this one, but we'll kind of swap first next time.
Sure, my pleasure. So thank you so much for having us, Justin. It's always lovely to talk to you and to explore this topic. Like you said, I'm part of the team at the International Wellbeing Institute, part of the EMEA team, and part of the Global Account Management team. I came into the industry through the International Wellbeing Institute, having spent 10 years working in sustainability with corporate organizations and helping them with their strategy around what is it they wanted to achieve in terms of sustainability and under the four pillars, and also for the output when it comes to reporting. And the journey has brought me to a place where I've learned a lot about the real estate connection to sustainability and how we're progressing through the changes happening, caused or supported by the legislation and regulation that we're all very familiar with, working under the framework of ESG for reporting and so on. So my journey has brought me to this opportunity to discuss with you how are we exploring different scenarios and situations that everybody's living and stressing over or enjoying, whatever your perspective is. So I hope that gives you a bit of an insight and background of who I am and why I'm here.
Great, thanks very much. And Sandra?
Hi, my name is Sandra Gritti. I'm Director of Leisman Futures at the Leisman Index. And primarily what we do is that we measure employee experience in the workplace and try to understand where workplaces support employees well or not so well, and help large organizations around the world and small ones to understand what they can do in their workplace to improve the experience of their employees. My personal journey has been that I've joined Leisman just under a year ago, but I've been in the real estate industry for more than 10 years, previously working at Edge Real Estate, one of the well-known real estate developers, which has pioneered really wonderful buildings in the field of sustainability. Maybe Giovanna is also familiar with them from that angle. But we've also explored a lot of things in terms of smart technology. What can you do with technology and sensors? So my journey has been very much about kind of the bricks and bytes for the last 10 years, and now entering kind of the behavioral side of understanding what workplaces do to people and how we can make sure that everybody has a great stay when they go to the office, that the office is the best place they can be in to actually get work done and is a good kind of counterpart to their work or other environment that they enjoy to be in.
Well, look, hopefully we can bring that sort of bricks to bytes to behaviours into kind of some of what we discuss, you know, that kind of view. And also, you know, Giovanna's previous experience of sustainability. I mean, one of the problems I sort of had when I looked at some of your discussion points is like how interrelated they all are. So, you know, if we dive into one, we're also talking about another. So I guess something which has come up a lot, and maybe we can frame that around, you know, where are we currently at, but this landlord versus tenant kind of dichotomy sort of comes up a lot. And I just wondered sort of where, you know, what you see as being the challenges there, where you might see that things could be, how those might be resolved, and particularly whether, like, you know, both IWBI and Leesman might be working together to try and solve some of those problems.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just wanted to add a point there that Sandra very kindly mentioned in terms of how we work together. As you well said, Justin, the International World Building Institute is the guardian of the WELL standard. As you can imagine, there's a framework for organizations to be able to use as a tool or a vehicle to be able to implement a lot of strategies around the health and well-being of occupants, which is what we care about the most. And as we always say, we're a part of a movement rather than an organization does it single-handedly. And in fact, we lean a lot on organizations like Leesman that provide companies data to understand what that looks like and what does it mean to them. And this is where the sustainability aspect comes in, I think, is the materiality for each organization is very different. What's material to them now, it could also vary from in terms of timelines, but also what is relevant to them in accordance and response to their own communities. So Leesman are great partners of ours, and we look at them to help us understand what is it that the community needs and requires, and what is it that they feel like after the standard is implemented. We've had the opportunity to present together many times in terms of case studies and to demonstrate through data, how does that work? What does it look like? And what do we need to do in terms of the opportunity to enhance that work? And I'll hand it over to Sandra to share a bit more about what Leesman does to be able to provide organizations with the support that they need to be able to understand themselves, in essence.
No, I think it's this perfect symbiosis of where I think also what the WELL Building Standard has been incredibly good at is catering towards owners and occupiers with your kind of more core and shell oriented part of the certification versus, let's say, the more occupier tenant side of things. And a lot of the clients that we work with are pursuing WELL Building Standard in their workplaces and are prescribing it also to the owners as a kind of essential aspect to their work experience. So I think that's one of the, you know, beautiful ways where we also see that a lot of buildings which are well certified tend to score relatively high on the Leesman Index. So employees do appreciate the work which is being put into the core, into the physical environment, making sure, you know, that all those aspects which affect them, you know, physically and mentally are taken care of. So I think we've had some lovely collaborations on that end. I think what we see on the, let's say, experience side of the occupier versus owner, the largest part of our clients are tenants or owner occupiers first and foremost. However, we have collaborated with a lot of innovative developers over the last years for them to try to understand what does the human experience look like in the workspace, and are there things that they can learn from the Leesman Index? So there are aspects such as we have the Leesman Plus certification, which is kind of an outstanding workplace. And what we see is that a lot of core shell aspects like atria, natural light, these kind of things that the owners very much influence are a key factor into it. And we also see that there's now, given the emptiness of real estate or the vacancy rates that we're seeing at the moment, you know, also owners are trying to understand their real estate not just as a cash flow, but to some extent also understand that they need to think about experience when it comes to the office, a little bit like what retail had a couple of years ago when we started having more virtual, you know, retail rather than like on-site retail. So we see the same kind of forces playing now at the office. So I think there's definitely, and that's something that also HQO has picked up, kind of understand that, you know, there is a niche or growing sector of the owner side, which is also starting to realize that experience matters, not just from the tenant side, but also from what the kind of space that you create And ultimately, that leads to the experience of the end user being the employee in a workspace, rather than just being the tenant that signs on the dotted line. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting.
I think we're also, we're just living in a very different time in terms of collaboration between the tenant and the occupier, where they become very dependent of each other. And I think the acceptance of that has helped us make a lot of progress.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because I often see that dichotomy playing out in different ways, you know, so it could be sometimes reframed as being energy efficiency versus experience, which you touched upon. And we can come to another one in a moment, but Giovanna has mentioned. And another might be like technology first versus people first, because what was very interesting about when I went to the IWBI's regional summit, there was actually very little discussion about technology per se, although obviously there's a backdrop to that. Whereas when I speak to sort of technology people, although there's a sort of acknowledgement of it's all about people, they kind of say things like, it's not about technology, it's about people, but hey, look at our new technology. So it's not completely been embraced in a way, but kind of taking this into a different way, which I think is a different reframing, which Giovanna first mentioned at one of the panels that I've moderated. And I think, and I forgive me if I haven't quoted this correctly, but you said there's a difference between efficient and effective buildings, because however much technology makes a building efficient, and that often seems to be framed around energy efficiency, if they are not occupied, they are neither effective nor sustainable. Is that something that you see that you two and your collaboration being the problem that you might be trying to help solve, is this idea of like effective buildings?
Absolutely, and I stand by that statement. You did quote it very well, Justine, so thank you for that. In terms of the effectiveness and efficiency and the technology companies, having come from sustainability and technology in the past as well, I understand why they take the position to take in terms of an effective building becomes an efficient building in their view, because data's priority. But we can forget that when you're talking to them, that you're talking to them because of their technology, and what they want to demonstrate is that that technology will give you valuable data. And I think that sometimes is missed in the mix and the midst of conversations, commercial conversations with them, where the platform itself might become the center of the conversation. In reality, their value is in the data. And the data comes in many forms and shapes. You know, you could obtain a lot of data to understand how a building is performing. But this was mentioned, funnily enough, at an event I attended recently, the GRI Club, where an empty building is as costly as a building that needs to be built from scratch, or a building that needs to be revamped. Yeah. You know, it is just about the people. This is about human capital from a different perspective. Without people being there present and wanting to attend and be there, the buildings are just an expense to organizations, and we're trying to reorganize the thinking to demonstrate that we need to support each other to make all of this work to our benefit, but never disregarding requirement. Here is all about making places that are healthy for people, and then they will come back to the office. They'll stand, you know, to be the first ones to say, I'd rather be in the office than at home. And that is happening with quite a few of the companies we're working with, and Sandra is able to give you a bit of data around case study specifically of the response that they get from occupiers and the individuals that are going in the office because they choose to be there rather than being at home. That's the big difference, I think, and that perhaps doesn't give us financial data in terms of return now. We're starting to see it trickling down, but don't forget, it's only been 2 years since we're doing all this work and campaigning for things to be different. So I think we're going to start to see a lot of data come back to us in terms of assets and the value of those, the ROI for all of this, because this is all investment after all. The alignment with ESG to do with frameworks, regulation, legislation, which means they won't be fined. There's a lot of things that we could discuss and help understand, but it is about people in the end.
I mean, I'll come back to the ROI side of it, because I think that's fascinating. But in terms of benchmarking, I think, Sandra, when we last spoke, you said something quite interesting about people saying how their benchmark was not necessarily the kind of, you know, top reference sites as far as what SMART is or whatever, but often their home working experience, you know, and that. So is that something that you're starting to see feed into sort of, you know, workplace design strategies, or, you know, how healthier buildings are considered from a sort of workplace design, workplace strategy, employee engaged, employee experience point of view?
Yeah. Well, interesting stuff. We're just going to publish a new research, which has been done in the last half year, looking specifically into our Leasman Plus buildings. So trying to decipher whether, you know, outstanding experiences drives higher attendance in the workplace. And I don't want to, you know, take away everything which has been found there, but I think the biggest impact that we saw was on what we call the workplace impact, which is basically what impact does the workplace have on you? Does it make you feel proud? Is it a place that makes you feel productive? Is it an enjoyable work? Does it create culture? Does it help build community? So basically the things that you're left with once you leave the office at the end of the day. And we do see that especially the impact side of things, so what people are left with and that positive kind of resonance that lingers after you left a place and that positive experience, that's where excellence can really make a difference. So when you give people choice about whether they go to the office, because a lot of times they don't because there's mandates, but when you give them choice, A, they are by large more satisfied with the workplace. And if they're given choice and they give an outstanding workplace, they will by choice come more to the workplace and have that great impact, right? So, but, you know, mandates, commute and other things, you know, play a big role in this as well. Going back to what Giovanna said about kind of like the powers which drive between the owners and occupiers in terms of KPIs, data points that they're interested in. We do have quite a lot of discussion with clients around which data is relevant and what should we start measuring, because it's kind of crazy that for the most part of real estate, we've only looked into data in real estate when it was about transactions, right? We looked at it when it was about a new lease coming up or a building was about to be sold. And then suddenly you had all these advisors scrambling to kind of figure out what they're actually selling and what's left the building, which has been run at very low cost and, you know, little data volumes for a long time. Whereas now we see that there's much more of an understanding that we need to start measuring what's happening during the operation. And that's where things such as experience, but also regulations such as, you know, what is your actual energy consumption in use rather than just the one that you designed for, are starting to play into it. So that data definitely plays a bigger role because of, you know, the changes in supply demand in the real estate. So you need to understand what is it actually that I'm working with, but also just legislation pushing for it, and that there's an opportunity to better cater towards, you know, the people's needs by understanding it. You know, I mean, every other industry, if software, retail, name it, gathers much more data on what's happening with their products than what real estate has ever done. So I think there's a lot of catching up to do. And we see the first signs of that kind of post-COVID through these new relationships between the owner-occupier market.
So one of the things sort of came up in the round table, in the sort of accompanying round table, and it'd be kind of fascinating to hear your two perspectives. And I'm sorry if this wasn't kind of completely framed in the issues that you suggested we should be speaking about, but it was like, who owns smart buildings? Now, I guess the same thing could be said about who owns effective buildings or who owns workplace experience or employee experience, because the lines seem to be blurring between the different roles. So I don't know how much, for example, that data, you know, until recently has played a major kind of role in, you know, the role of the CHRO, for example, or, you know, or chief people officer in the way that it might have done in someone whose responsibility is to drive energy efficiency. So are you starting to see someone or some role that is emerging from both your perspectives that, you know, that is the person, that is the type of role who's driving this thing, championing it, making it happen or not?
No. We work with a lot of different organizations that have developed a slightly different structure, and I've noticed that these roles are separate when it comes to smart buildings. And I think it's because they require a level of understanding around data and some level of sustainability knowledge and how they then bring that into the overall strategy. That role is relatively new, and it's not necessarily people in organizations that are completely knowledgeable about it, because this is, again, an emerging market, I would say, in terms of where these sits. Because before, if we think about it, you know, 10, 15 years ago, what would you have considered to be a smart building? Is one that has the technology incorporated into it, so it measures certain things, or does it, or that it makes it work effectively and efficiently? Nowadays, it's a little bit more aligned to ESG in terms of the data. So they look at net zero or carbon or impact measurements. However, I'll give you an example of one building that I visited recently in Canary Wharf. That building has the best possible type of lighting that is very good for health and well-being of the occupants, 100%. It's passed a lot of tests and so on. But also, that building never turns the lights off, or ever. So what does it mean in terms of impact? It might be good for people when it's occupied, but overnight, nobody's there. And yet they don't turn the lights off for whatever reason. So there's a question around all this knowledge being gathered and experiences. And are we actually being ourselves effective in using the data that we have in order to be more efficient in terms of energy? That is a whole different topic, though.
Yeah, but I fully agree with Giovanna, and I think that's also why I say very bluntly no, because I think after having worked in kind of the smart building sphere for, you know, more than 7 years now, I think one of the problems that we have is that there's a belief that there's one single stakeholder which is going to drive this and is going to own this. And actually what we're seeing is the opposite, which is what we see is that there's different stakeholders which benefit in different ways from the same data. And we see that also on the tenant side, the lines are blurring. The silos of IT, FM, HR are blurring, and they're blurring very differently in different ways. And when we were trying to actually get value out of data by doing deep data analysis, you only get the value when you start comparing and triaging. When you start comparing, it's always something that we're doing, for example, with some of our clients, that we compare leaseman experience data, so kind of what we get out of the surveys, with occupier and occupancy sensor data, and understanding, okay, people are saying that maybe meeting rooms are less important to them, but do we actually see that also from the sensor data? Or do we see that there's a design mismatch? Can we start understanding better why the experience might be positive or negative? And can we use that to inform future design? So I think it's understanding where, for example, something as simple as a presence sensor, which tells you if a room is occupied, is super valuable for an owner from a sustainability perspective, because they can start potentially driving light, like Giovanna said, based on occupancy, and say, look, if nobody's in the room, turn off the lights. At the same sensor, exactly the same sensor and data point, is super valuable for the tenant to understand how their spaces are being used. So you invest once in this technology, but you'd use the data in different ways. So something that we've tried initially with Edge was making these all-encompassing data computers, and we would do everything for the tenant and everybody else and own all the data from like, say, 0 to 100. And what we started to learn is that this, A, gives a certain lock-in. It doesn't allow tenants to make flexible choices on a portfolio level rather than on a building level. And it was a much better strategy to do what we called IoT-enabled building, which basically meant that we would take the building to the level that made sense from an owner's perspective. But then we made sure we had a very smooth, easy, integratable point where the tenant could access that data and use it for their own purposes. So making that data being part of basically the lease agreement that the tenant has and being able to use that data if they wish. And that way you made sure the tenant didn't invest in the same thing again, use the same technology, the same rare materials and everything else, and double up all the work. So I think it's more, I think what we lack in real estate is not one single owner of smartness. It's a general illiteracy when it comes to technology and a kind of a fear of getting familiarized with new terminology and understanding what it means. It should be something which we need to raise the bar in every single field within, if it's HR or facility management or whatever, and even for IT to understand the building industry to then get it apart, which makes it difficult to sell, which makes it difficult for people to get through that kind of complexity. But I think that's the only way you can really drive value out of, you know, smart technology is that integration piece across different stakeholders.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was kind of a lead into the theme around ROI, but just sort of backtracking a bit. I mean, you know, we've also discussed, and it was presented at IWBI Regional Summit, you know, Leisman's idea of a minimum viable office. Now, I guess the bit that I've been mulling over since sort of seeing that presentation is, could that be tracked back to some sort of technical, tracked back to some technical or functional specification, or are we really talking about in experience terms around that term?
Go on, Sandra.
No, please go ahead, Joanna. I'm happy to.
I think you gave us the answer already, Justin, in terms of the how to best utilize that and where does it sit, where does it feel right in terms of understanding it first and also being effective whatever the outcome is. But when it comes to smart technologies, let's simplify this a little bit, potentially too much. What is considered to be smart in terms of technology? Mm-hmm. Smart is when it does something for you that enables you to focus on strategy. So you do have to set it up and configure it in a way that has a clear understanding of what you want to achieve with it. And that's a big part of the conversations around existing building technologies and other technologies that are being utilized to pull data for organizations to be able to focus on what is relevant to them. So to the point of perhaps even helping them measure what is material. But that to work, you need to tell the technology what is that you want to get out of it, of that relationship in essence. Mm.
And I think that plays then back to what we're saying about the minimum viable product directly, Joanna, is that the idea of the minimum viable office is very much thinking about, there's this old saying in architecture, form follows function. But our understanding is that, you know, even before function, the what you do in the office comes the purpose. So why do we have offices after all? I mean, if people showed that they were capable of working from home, you know, why do you still have all these thousands of square meters of real estate which are partially empty? And, you know, the main idea there is that it needs to be purposeful. It needs to be very clear for what reason you come to the office. And maybe to put that into simple terms, if, you know, if I go to an Italian restaurant, and my husband's Italian, so he tends to be pretty, you know, precise in where we go. But if I go to an Italian restaurant, I expect an amazing Italian pasta. But if they're going to put a chicken curry in front of me, I'm left with a bad experience. I'm probably not going to come back, right? So, yeah. And the thing is, if you're not precise about what kind of restaurant you are or what kind of office you offer, is it a space for collaboration, for people to come together? Everybody's going to come with their own expectations and they're going to say, look, I'm going to go to the office to collaborate. No, I'm going to go to the office to focus because at home I cannot. And then trying to cater to all those different expectations, which are not aligned from your thousands or hundreds of employees that you have, leaves you in a very difficult place to exceed expectations. So what our research has shown and what we're catering for is say, be more precise on what the expectations are, communicate that clearly, and then make the functionalities in the workplace work for that. And then ultimately also the technology which serves that. So if we're saying, you know, this is the best place to do hybrid communications and hybrid collaboration, which we see an incredible rise in, of course, in the last years, and which is also shown in the data, then the technology needs to be perfectly able to cater towards that, right? So we're, as if we see that this is a space for us to collaborate and communicate, what is then the right technology for it? So it's always the means to the end, and being the minimum viable office basically says, you know, reduce your expectations, be more precise on your expectations, and then make sure that you do that really, really well. And then you from there kind of make sure that your employees get what they want and what they can, you know, expect from the workplace as a, you know, counterpart to their home environment or third space where they work.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, from someone who sort of comes from a human-centered design background, what excited me about the term minimum viable office is it had sort of, it chimed with all the talk in lean startup of minimum viable products and agile methodologies, design thinking, where you design your way to a solution. So rather than necessarily trying to end game what purpose, function, if they're not the same, if those aren't actually the same words, form, would be that you kind of work, you build your way towards a solution rather than, but to be able to do that, you must have to have some kind of starting place, and that will be some kind of technology foundation, some kind of, you know, what it is, data strategy or whatever, in terms of what it is that you're going to be trying to get data on to be able to help you. So rather than necessarily have some great vision about this, because things are evolving, you may just design your way towards a solution more iteratively. But I don't know. See that sort of being the term?
Well, it's not, let's say, to the extent that you've put it, but I think inherently what we've always advocated, I think from Leesman, and I think also what's inherent in the well-building standard, is that you measure whatever you've done, right? And you try to iterate and try to find new ways of improving things, right? It's not that you do one time and you're done. So a lot of our clients come to us on a yearly or bi-yearly basis to keep testing and improving. And it's about measuring and understanding. I think the same goes for the well-building standards. You know, you get your certification, but then you need to continuously measure and improve and make sure you keep up to par. So I think real estate, given its longevity, doesn't inherently have that in it as much. At the same time, given the uncertainty that people just don't know what the right size is, and there's no one size fits all, there is much more experimenting and much more of an understanding that real estate is a process rather than a project that you then write off for the next 10 years and then you start all over again. So I think that that understanding is more there in the market now than it used to be.
As much as we're trying to standardize things to help maintain a certain level of certainty, we have to help organizations consider that, you know, things will vary from one to another, and also depending on their, like I said, material, it was material to them, the size of the organization, everything is so relevant to each individual case. And I'm sure Sandra has the opportunity to share case studies. When it comes to case studies, they're all very different. We learn something new from each one of those.
I mean, some of my thinking has sort of been informed by sort of researching retrofitting, because, you know, and we've touched upon the idea of sort of unutilized assets, which could potentially become stranded assets. But interestingly, when I look at retrofitting and particularly kind of sustainability size, it's often sort of framed in either the physical or the digital. But I think what's interesting about, you know, where you're coming from is there's the people. I don't know, and unfortunately that doesn't have an AL on the end of it, so the people are out. But where you go, physical, digital, people. But how, what I'm, what would be interesting is to understand is maybe how you might see some alignment or crosswalks between those different things. Because if I look at something like LEED, or I look at something like BREEAM or RESET or whatever, or GRESB or whatever, often those don't seem to be incredibly digitally informed. They seem to be physically informed, as terms of what it is that they're rating and the why of that. Do you see any, can you see this sort of, that sort of pyramid between, I guess, people, technology and place, or maybe it is people, place, platform or something, if we're going to make it for the three P's. But the can you see a way that like crosswalks and alignments could happen between those three different areas? So people start seeing the other perspectives there?
I reckon that it's more to do with applicability. So I think what we do within the standard and the frameworks and the program itself, and if you think about how, and I'll ask Sandra to put her, get at her input here, but look at the other certification programs as well. We are enabling, we're creating vehicles for all of this to take place. Now, the crosswalks in terms of the strategy is dependent on how the organization wants to implement all of those three aspects. I have a client at the moment that has a thousands of locations where they have chosen to implement an environmental certification, the WELL standard for health and well-being of occupants, as well as a smart building one. And the way they are applying this is by creating a strategy that brings it all together with an output to be able to measure success in the first year. That sounds like an ideal scenario to me. However, they still have to include the likes of the Lisbon Index, the surveys to understand the occupancy of each one of those locations, because they're all completely different. So I think that's applicable, is how you apply all of these vehicles that will help them get to a point of success.
And I think also, if you look at top A refurbishments or new builds, I think you've seen a lot more over the last 10 years that they apply both well and sustainable standards. And also the standards have been well aligned over the last years, that they kind of, you know, smoothly, you know, work with and against each other. And then, you know, things such as Wired Score or Smart Score, others which are coming in, which are then adding more on the technology side. I think the one thing to be aware of, that there's a lot of, like, you know, still financial drivers in the real estate industry, especially when it comes between, you know, the owners and the tenants. We do see that ESG is playing more into that, and there's more of a need to also consider other aspects with legislation. So these are smoothing out the variables against which we, you know, collaborate, design, and where there's potential. But there's very different stressors on the different industries. So the stressors that the tenant is working with right now in terms of, you know, return to office potentially, or enabling hybrid working, or figuring out how they're going to position themselves in this whole workplace side of things, versus the owners, which are just left with a, you know, very, very strenuous situation in terms of their situation, in terms of capital, in terms of the amount of assets they have that they need under management, that they need to take care of, the sustainability regulations which are on top of them. I think we're going to see another, you know, 3-4 years of less collaboration across, unfortunately, some of the tenants and owners, and more them, each of them trying to kind of like figure out their new realities to then come back together. The only hope is I have is that there's going to be forerunners, people which understand the potential of the more integrated approach, where, you know, those innovations can happen and they can be kind of like the lighthouses for others to then join once they've cleaned up their own backyards a little bit. But
I think in the end, all roads lead to collaboration, Justin. If things don't come together for the benefit of the occupants, and that will obviously benefit both the landlords and the occupiers, things just stall. And you may quote me again, all roads lead to collaboration for the success of ESG.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you. And I think we see the first signs of that, definitely.
Well, I mean, just to sort of, because it's really important topic now, if we can just sort of look at ROI for a moment, because I wonder if you're speaking to, like, you know, quantity surveyors or project managers, whether kind of what Leastman talk around the return on workplace experience, or even maybe healthy buildings, you know, how the increase on productivity, or, you know, what the tenant KPIs might be as far as ROI is concerned. Are you seeing any evidence of that starting to happen from that side rather than necessarily from the occupier side?
Weird, at least from the, I mean, Leastman looks very much at the tenant side with our return on experience investment, which is essentially us putting into relationship experience, space use, and occupier costs, and trying to understand that these are kind of like the main forces at play at the moment. I mean, there's a lot of other things at play as well, and they all happen within ESG realm. But in terms of the experience side, you know, it's a bit like the efficiency effectiveness thing for that Giovanna has pointed out, you know. Having an amazing building with an amazing experience where only two people show up every day is still a waste of resources. Whereas if you have a highly used building but with a very negative experience of employees, it has a negative overall experience on your business. So we see a lot of changes in the way that tenants are starting to understand which data is important for them to make portfolio decisions and make decisions about where to invest and improve and create better experiences. So we're trying to make that, help them put those things into context and see the relationships that they have with each other. Because maybe, as you know, as Giovanna says, since we're more like the oil and the machinery, part of what we try to do is also create advocacy for this integration of knowledge and data.
Yeah. Not much different from me, Justin, in terms of how this would work in terms of the ecosystem and going back to the collaboration piece, it's about the ecosystem and how people respond and react to all of these assets and opportunities.
Yeah.
So going back to sort of the original sort of progression of where are we at, where do we need to be, how do we get there, can we finish off maybe on just looking about what you both think needs to happen and that being part maybe and that being part of like getting to the promised land?
Yeah. My thinking has always been around the approach we take in terms of the path one for ESG reporting, because it's a big part of the process and why this is happening. It's an instigator as such, and that's how the real estate construction development world came to play in the sustainability ground. Considering that, that's something that must happen. So I would look at considering accuracy to begin with. At the very least, demonstrate all of the efforts are aligned to the ESG data requirements for compliancy, because that's a must. And if that doesn't happen, it's going to create a level of pain in the pockets that may leave a bitter taste in their mouth. And therefore, that is, you start to reject that. It's just the nature of things. The other side, of course, is I am meeting more and more people that have been campaigning for a sustainable approach to their own industries, but just haven't had the data to back it up, which means we continue to lean on the data that comes out of technologies that produce that from the smart building aspect of things, but they need to be aligned to something. So impact or net zero or decarbonization. Organizations that have the academic knowledge and are able to come up with surveys and indexes like Listman, and organizations that deploy this, i.e. partners that have access to the assets and that do the day-to-day work. We have a program called the Enterprise Provider Program, where CBRE are part of, and we have smaller consultancies like Foster that are also part of that. And they work with organizations, and they get to see the back end of the reality. And they have golden nuggets. Mm-hmm. You know, they have data that is really relevant to how you implement that, all that knowledge, and make it happen successfully. And when I say successfully, I mean the cost to success as well as the data. And what's required for all of this to happen is collaboration. So I go back to the point I made. All roads will lead to collaboration if we want to succeed at this game.
Sandra, have you got anything to add?
No, I think I fully underwrite what Giovanna says. There's this point of, you know, of course, data accuracy. And I think the main thing to worry about more is how can we, you know, leverage the existing data in better ways and integrate it among different stakeholders to understand things. So I think that the future is less about, you know, worrying about data ownership, but more about activating that data to create first case studies, insights that we can build upon to then get more people on board on understanding where data is valuable and how collaborating around using data in various different ways can actually help us to move the industry forward. So I fully underwrite what Giovanna just said.
Well, look, huge thanks to you both for your time today. Really fascinating. You know, as is part of what I've been trying to do here is provide, you know, various different perspectives from across the ecosystem. So it's really been brilliant to be able to hear from, like, you know, that side of it, because often, you know, I'm speaking to people on the kind of rating of buildings from a kind of digital point of view, or I'm speaking to people who might be more more environment, energy efficiency focused or whatever. So it's really fascinating. Huge thanks. And look forward to catching up with both of you soon.
Thank you so much, Justin.
Thank you for having us, Justin.
Yeah, thank you for enabling these conversations as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.